Hello, can you hear me? Okay. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to this afternoon's session of the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs. You can't hear me? Okay. They will welcome you to this afternoon's session of the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs. I extend my welcome not only to the folks in the room, but also to our TV audience. My name is Sarah Ames, and I am today's moderator. Just a few things before we get started. I'd like to remind you to pay your $8 for your lunch and just place that money in the basket. Make change amongst yourselves, I guess. I'd also like to acknowledge our sponsors. We're very grateful to Shore TV, the University of Lethbridge, Lethbridge Herald, and Ericsson's Restaurants, and of course the many volunteers who do make this this event possible. We are going to be hearing from today's speaker for the next 25 to 30 minutes, after which we will then have lunch, and there will be a question period for 30 minutes, which will start at 1 o'clock. I will, without further ado then, I would like to introduce you to today's speaker. Her name is Elma Ginto. She is the Executive Director of Flexibility Learning Systems here in Lethbridge, and Flexibility Learning Systems offers classes to adult immigrants and refugees, as well as offering an employment program that assists newcomers in finding relevant work once they are in Canada. So, please welcome El McIntyre. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you for inviting me here to speak today. I always enjoy speaking about the work that I do. I have a wonderful job. I work with such wonderful people. So I love to share what we do, and I love to share some of the experiences that our newcomers have when they come to Canada. One of the hot issues, of course, in the news today is the topic of labor shortages in Canada. And one of the ways, of course, of dealing with the labor shortages is the governments are looking at immigration, increasing the number of immigrants that are coming to the community. And we have employers coming into the school on a fairly regular basis and phoning us and saying, we need workers. Do you have any workers for us? And even, you know, on a regular basis, as you walk around the community, you can see that our community is changing. The faces in our community are changing. So that's what I want to talk a little bit about today. Who's coming to Canada? What's happening? And what's happening when the newcomers arrive in Canada? Are they finding employment? What's happening with that situation? So just to give you a bit of a background, I have been running flexibility learning systems for the last 15 years, initially starting with just language and then branching out to the field of employment and working with probably 100 newcomers every year with various levels of skills, various levels of education and language, and assisting them in looking for employment. And I shouldn't really say assist them in looking for employment, because what we want to do is we want to teach them how to look for jobs in Canada. So what I'm going to be talking about today comes from my years of experience working at the school and working with newcomers. So it's my personal experiences, but I think what I'm going to be talking about probably reflects what's happening in other communities as well in Alberta and probably across Canada. So a little background information. Last year we had close to 19,000 immigrants that came to Alberta, which is about 7% of the total number of immigrants that came to Canada. So if you look at the population, if you look at the number of immigrants that came to Canada, you look at the population of Alberta, on a percentage basis, Alberta should probably be receiving about 10% of the immigrants, and that's what the provincial government is looking at doing, increasing those numbers. And for the numbers for Lethbridge, the last numbers I looked at were for 2004, and they said 177 people that came to Lethbridge. I think those numbers are somewhere around 175, 200 people that come to Lethbridge every year. So who's coming and how are they coming? About 60% of the immigrants that come to Alberta are coming as independent immigrants or economic immigrants. They include the skilled workers that are coming. The skilled workers are what we're hearing about a lot in the news today. These are the people who have gone through the points process. They've had their skills looked at, their language skills, their education, the post-secondary education. And on the basis of points that are awarded, they've been allowed to enter Canada. We also have a lot of business people that are coming that are included in this group as well. And actually, what I heard was that this was the group that is actually, the numbers are increasing the fastest. There was an increase of about 38% from the previous years to the number of business people that are coming to Alberta. The ones that we've been working with primarily in our school have been a lot of the people who have been coming from Korea, the people who are looking to invest in businesses in Lethbridge, particularly a lot of the hotel businesses and the service station industries. And when I asked them why they're looking at buying the hotels or building hotels or hotels, they tell me, well, my English skills are not so good, and so I think maybe I can manage a hotel, and especially if I have my family help me. So they're looking at it as a family business. We also have people that are coming to Alberta under the PNP program, the Provincial Nominee Program. These are people who are skilled workers that are coming to the province and they're on the invitation of employers. So if there are employers who cannot find people, skilled people to fill some of their positions, they can request that they bring in someone from overseas. For example, I know of a company in town who brought in an upholsterer because they couldn't find anybody in Lethbridge that would do the job after doing a lot of advertising. So about 60% of these people coming as economic or independent immigrants. About 30% of the people that are coming to Alberta are family class. So these are the ones that are being sponsored to come here. For example, the ones that we work with a lot are the men from China, from Vietnam, who've gone back home and have married and are bringing their wife to Canada. We have a lot of those now from Afghanistan or Iran who are sponsoring their wives to come. We have men who marry women, for example, from the Philippines or from Russia, so they're bringing them to Canada. We also have other families, particularly like a lot of families from India who are sponsoring family members to come to Canada. So they comprise about 30% of the immigrants who are coming to Alberta. And then the other 10% are the refugees that are coming. The ones that we work with primarily at Flexibility Learning Systems, the refugees kind of come in waves, and at the moment we're working a lot with people from Afghanistan. In the past we worked perhaps a bit more with the people from Sudan. We also have refugees from, Colombia, a lot of different places, but many of them are from Afghanistan. A lot of the refugees that we work with have all sorts of issues, settlement issues, language issues, education that was interrupted. Some of them have not worked for long periods of time. So they have kind of their own set of problems or a unique set of problems when they come to settling in Canada or in Alberta or even Lethbridge. Another group of workers, they're not here as immigrants, but they are coming here to work, is the category called temporary foreign workers. And this is what we're going to be hearing at probably more and more in the news as well. These are the unskilled workers that are coming in, that businesses are bringing in because they're not able to fill the positions they have on the production line, in the food processing industries, the manufacturing industries. So they're going to countries, for example, like El Salvador, and bringing in perhaps 20 people to work on the production line here. Or they're going to the Philippines. The meat cutting plant in Red Deer has brought in, I don't know how many, 50, 60 people from El Salvador to work in the meat cutting plant there. And this is a big issue here in Lethbridge right now because a lot of businesses are looking at this as how can we bring in people overseas on a temporary work permit. So what sort of qualifications do these people have who are coming? What do they bring with them? What sort of skills do they have? Many of the independent immigrants, the skilled workers, are coming from countries like China, the Philippines, India. More than half of them have university degrees. The most common university degree in my research and what we have noticed is people who are coming with degrees, science degrees. Particularly if you're looking at the people that are coming from China, a lot of them have science degrees, as well as India. The second group are the ones that are coming with business degrees, or degrees in finance. And the third one is degrees in government or related to teaching or something like that. So these are the skilled workers that are coming. These are the skills, the qualifications they're bringing with them. Now, if you look at the employment situation in Alberta, what sort of skills are the employers needing in Alberta? The Alberta government has said that they need about 86,000 new workers over the next 10 years. And where are the shortages? The shortages are in the trades areas. The occupation that has the fastest growing shortages, does that sound right? Was carpenters. Carpenters. And then electricians, I believe, was number three. Heavy-duty mechanics was on the list. So this is where there are some real shortages in our labor, in the workplace. So when we look at the immigrants that are coming into the country with their degrees in sciences and business and finance, and we're looking at some of the needs that are out there in the community, there seems to be a disconnect between the two. And that is an area that perhaps, I'm sure, the employers will be doing some more lobbying on getting perhaps the governments to look at that and what sort of qualifications they're going to be requiring for immigrants to come into the community. So how are things working out with the newcomers that are coming? And what sorts of issues might they be facing when they come to Lethbridge? Well, the number one challenge that a lot of the newcomers have is the language. Even though skilled workers are required to have some sort of a command of the English language when they or French when they come to Alberta or they come to Canada, many of them do not have a high enough standard of English to be able to enter their professions. If you look at what's required, for example, of engineers, of nurses, of any of these so-called regulated professions, they have to pass an English test, a TOEFL English test or a CELBAN English test. Those are extremely difficult English tests. In fact, the Engineering Association requires an almost perfect score on the English TOEFL test. And if I were to give that test, I think, to grade 12 students, I'm not sure how well that they would do on the English test because it is very difficult. So we have that barrier of the English language. So they have access to some lower level language classes when they get here. I mean, there is the government language program, the LINK program that they can access for free. The program, though, is a settlement language program. So it's a program in learning about the community, learning about the healthcare system, learning about finding a place to live in Lethbridge. So it's the content, living in Canada, living in Lethbridge, and then the grammar, the structure that goes together with it. So it doesn't get into, you know, any of that technical kind of language, and that's an area that, you know, immigrants really struggle with. And when you have the numbers in Lethbridge, we don't have the numbers like they would have in Calgary or Edmonton, for example, where you can put together a class and say, okay, we're going to put together a class for 15 engineers, and we're going to teach them a higher level of English, and we're going to teach them the technical language that they're going to require to write their exams. Or in Edmonton, they also have, for example, a pharmacy program where the pharmacists can go. They can get the language they need, and they can get assistance in preparing for their exams. Well, something like that, you know, just isn't possible in Lethbridge because we don't have the numbers to justify a class. I mean, certainly there are higher levels of English programs available. You know, the university, the college have higher levels of programming. But there is, of course, the issue of cost involved, although the college now has a government-funded language program that goes to a bit of a higher level, so that certainly is of some benefit. The other thing that we found is that Our education system is very different sometimes from education systems of other countries. And some newcomers find it very difficult to fit into a classroom, for example, a linked classroom, where we don't study out of a textbook and study just the grammar. Our language program is to teach about the community. It's to teach about the language together with us happening in the community. And there's no textbook out there that's going to teach us about the past perfect tense and living in Lethbridge. You know, it doesn't exist. So we have to create a lot of our own materials. And there are students that are uncomfortable with that because they want a textbook, they want, you know, use that dictionary. And in fact, we've had, you know, students come and they've been in class for 2 days and they said, okay, I will go home and I will study with my dictionary. Well, you know, that's your choice. But the dictionary doesn't talk to you and it doesn't respond to you. And, you know, yes, you can work on some of your reading and writing skills, but, you know, what about those conversational skills? And so sometimes that does, pose a bit of a dilemma. Another big issue is the recognition of qualifications. We have a lot of highly skilled professionals that are coming to Alberta, and what opportunities are there to practice their profession? I mean, of course, we have, you know, the regulated professions like the doctors, the nurses, the pharmacists. We have the unregulated professions as well, the graphic artists, the computer programs. So people who are going into some of the unregulated professions, they're able to find employment often, fairly quickly often, perhaps fairly close to what they might have had before in their country. However, as we all know, it's very difficult for someone who's a doctor to become a doctor in Canada. It's almost impossible. Engineers, very difficult. Pharmacists, it can be done. It is a long process. It is a difficult process. Nurses, it can be done. Again, it is a long and difficult process. It takes a lot of time to go through that whole process, get your English exam, write your exams for your profession, and then there's the waiting time in between. The exams can be very expensive. Meanwhile, you're trying to think about how you're going to support your family. You know, so there's a lot of issues involved in that. And then, of course, the language. Do you have enough language to write those exams? So it is a problem. We also have one of the issues that we deal with on a regular basis as well is newcomers saying, well, I must go back to school to get my Canadian diploma. And I say to them, okay, well, now why do you need to get your Canadian diploma? You have a degree from your country. In fact, you may have two university degrees from your country. Well, I know I can't get a job without a Canadian diploma. Well, who told you that? Well, I know that. So did you go around and ask some of the businesses? Well, no, but I know that. I know I can't do that. And so then you have to deal with that mindset that says, well, maybe you can. Maybe you can try. Maybe you should see if it's possible. So we sometimes have this mindset, I know I can't be an engineer, so I'm going to go wash dishes. We had an engineer coming from Bulgaria. He came to Canada 2 days, and he started washing dishes at a restaurant. And we said, why? Well, I know my English is not good. I know I'm not going to get a job as an engineer, so I need to do something to support my family, so I'm going to go wash dishes. Well, of course, he ended up washing dishes for 2 days and came back and says, well, you know, I really don't want to wash dishes. Okay, well, then let's look at some other opportunities. And you know, we had a lady from Colombia that we've been working with recently. She's an industrial engineer. She also has a degree in mathematics. And she says, well, I must go back to school. Well, why? Because I don't have a Canadian degree. Well, why do you need to go back to school? Well, you know, I know they're not going to give me a job, so I will go work in a store part-time or in a restaurant, and then I will go back to school. And what will you do in school? Well, I will study English, and then I will study upgrading, and then I will go take an engineering technologist diploma. Well, why would you want to do that? Well, I know I can't work as an engineer, so I might as well do this, and then I'm going to get a Canadian diploma at the end. Now, part of it is, yes, they believe that it's not possible. Part of it is that perhaps they haven't tried, or when they came here to Lethbridge, the first week they visited all these places that might hire, perhaps, somebody with their skills, but They burned a lot of bridges. They weren't quite sure how to approach employers. They didn't have resumes that really reflected what they had done. There was sometimes maybe an expectation that they would just give me a job, or there's an expectation they wouldn't give me a job. And so there's lots of issues that are involved in that. So the end result is, well, no, I can't get a job. I have to go back and get a diploma. And sometimes there's a lot of fear, and rightfully so. It's pretty difficult to come to a new country and, look for that first job. It's hard. They're scared sometimes. So sometimes it's safer to go back to school than it is to perhaps go back into the workforce immediately. One of the other things that happens is you get so caught up in, you've got to pay your expenses, you've got to pay your rent, you've got to buy your food, you get caught up in the day-to-day stuff that you sometimes lose sight of your long-term plan. So you're coming, you're saying, okay, I was an engineer, I want to be an engineer in Canada, and I know it's going to take a long time, so then I'm going to take a part-time job here. So then I take a part-time job here, and then I see, well, maybe I should take another part-time job because this isn't really enough. So then I take another part-time job. Okay, well, then maybe I should buy a house, and then we get another part-time job. And soon we're doing 3 part-time jobs because we want to buy a house and we want to buy a car. And then, you kind of forget about this other track that you were going to take that was going to lead you towards that engineering certification that you might have wanted in Alberta. So that is also something that happens quite often. We had a fellow from China, a mining engineer in his country. Well, he was a mining engineer, but he actually hadn't worked for a mining company for 15 years. He'd been a professor at the university. So he was coming here to be a mining engineer. Well, his language skills were not great. He hadn't really worked for a mining company for a long time. He did do some applications to try and get some sort of work, perhaps related to mining, but got so caught up in all of the day-to-day stuff, the part-time jobs, the buying this, buying that, and at the end he says, I don't know why I came to Canada, because I can't find a job in Canada. I'll never be an engineer. And I'm saying, well, you've made some choices along the way, so you've either got your you've got to get yourself on track then as to what it is that you're doing. Those are the choices that you've made, and and that happens a lot as well. Sometimes the jobs or the skills that they have can be too specific for a community like Lethbridge. On the other hand, sometimes they're just too general. If you worked as a railway engineer in your country, it's not the easiest job to get in Alberta as a railway engineer or a mining engineer. On the other hand, office administration is a very broad sort of area, and you're in competition with a lot of people then to get some of the office jobs, and your language may not be so great, you may not be familiar with some of the routines of an officer, so that also poses some problems. So what are some of the things that we can do to help some of the newcomers that are coming, to enable them to find, productive work in the community and in Alberta? Of course, the first one is language. And one of the things that we've been working on a lot, and I think has been quite successful, is trying to set up mentorships where the new Canadians are able to have a mentor in the community. So somebody who's coming in as an engineer is able to mentor with an engineer. And I must say that professionals in Lethbridge have been very receptive to this. So, I mean, they're very open to that. The problem that arises is sometimes people are not willing to make the time commitment to that. Because I think in order to do a good mentorship, you have to be willing to spend, make a commitment of 3 to 6 months, preferably, a couple of hours a week or, a couple of hours a month to something like that. But when it is set up, it can work very well. And that's a way of getting at the technical language that some of our clients need. There are, like I say, examples of higher level English classes that are available. A lot of them cost money. But also we have found that there are clients, if they're resourceful enough and they want to do it, there are back doors that you can go into. We had a client who was tested on the language benchmark assessment. His scores weren't very high. But he was able to get his way into a university management class He took the one class and they did okay, and he's gone in and now he's taking all sorts of management courses. And you looked at his language level and you would have thought, okay, he still, you know, belongs in a government language program. And he said, I don't have time for that. Let me see if there's another way I can do this. And he did. A lot of the newcomers also, lack of work experience in Canada, and this is where doing work experiences and doing mentoring really can be a benefit as well. We've had a lot of success with pharmacists doing work experiences and, you know, or getting jobs perhaps as pharmacy technicians while they study to become pharmacists. One of the big issues is with the professional bodies, the professional agencies. And this is something, you know, that was commented on the paper the other day, too. I know there's work that's being done with some of the professional agencies, but there certainly is a lot more work that needs to be done. If you look, for example, at the nursing profession, they really have worked very closely with the newcomers in trying to get them accredited and helping them pass their nursing exams. When somebody writes that nursing exam and they don't pass the exam, they're allowed to have a look at the exam and say, these are the parts where you need to do some extra work on. And the Nursing Association will look at trying to arrange some tutoring or some mentoring with these clients so that they're able to get some assistance as they prepare to write that exam as well. Again, I should say. Now, my experience, for example, with pharmacists and the Pharmacy Association is that doesn't happen. I've had pharmacists saying, I wrote the exam, I failed the exam, but I have no idea why I failed, what I did wrong, what I should do different next time. And so that becomes very frustrating because there is no feedback at all on those exams that are written. Another thing with the professional bodies, like I mentioned before, they are requiring high levels of English, you know, those high TOEFL scores in some of the tests, and that does pose a problem. Yes, we do, you know, we need to expect a certain level, a certain standard of English of our professionals, but whether we need a perfect score in a TOEFL test, I'm not sure if that's the case. We also need to look at what our institutions are doing. As I mentioned before, this lady from Columbia is going to go back to school and do English and upgrading and take an engineering technologist program. So we also need to look at having the institutions look at evaluating the credentials, the certificates that people are bringing with them, and assisting them in making decisions so that they can get the... point out the fastest way possible for them to get that accreditation that they need. Another thing, career planning. One of the things that we do a lot is career planning, is trying to assist our clients in making short-term and long-term goals because they get a lot of advice from a lot of different people. And then they'll go this way and that way, and everybody has their best interest in heart, but you know, sometimes it's really confusing. So we really want to look at that career planning. And sometimes clients need to get a job perhaps in a field that's related to what they were doing before. They may not be able to be an accountant, but they can be an accounting technician. Or they maybe need to go back and just upgrade their skills a bit in order to get a job that they might need. And sometimes they even will look at a totally different job. I know I'm coming to the end of my time here. So I think the important thing that we need to look at is we need to be a welcoming community. We've got some great employers out there. Certainly there's things that they still could be doing in terms of, you know, some cultural sensitivity training. But there are some great workers out there. We have some great people in the community who are very welcoming to immigrants. Again, the more we can do to include them in activities that we're doing in the community. Sarah's agency, who does a lot of the settlement as well, you know. So there are things happening, but we certainly could do more. And looking at making sure that our workforces reflect the diversity that there is now in the community. And so there are a lot of success stories out there, but there's also still a lot of work that needs to be done. Thank you.